This is the Popmatic Podcast for November 25th, 2015. I told you I was thankful. What more do you want?
Super thanks?
Visible contrition. The Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me today are...
Hello, dedicated Popmatic listeners. So, this week, we came to record the podcast, and the equipment wasn't here. It was out being used for an oral history project at a local high school. So we literally ran around the library until we found something to record this podcast on. And we got it recorded. But the mics were a little hot this time, but we got it done.
So be thankful. We are. Can't you tell? We're thankful. I said we're thankful already. I said... Oh, shit.
I am Brian, and joining me today are...
Jeremy.
Bill.
Amanda.
Mike.
All right, Turkey Day is coming up, and that's a good time to reflect on all the things that we are thankful for. A lot of those things you can get from the library, we're going to tell you about them. Even books about genocide of indigenous peoples of the Americas by Europeans.
We're thankful for that?
Yeah, I guess who's into Still Cold Bummers?
No, I was just saying that you could get books about the genocide of indigenous peoples of the Americas by Europeans at the library.
Oh,
so we're thankful for the book,
Turkey
not
Day.
The act.
That we could go and learn about that and many other things.
Prevent it from happening again.
Or we could get a pillowcase and decorate it to be an Indian vest, like my son is doing at school.
That's a burn.
And my wife is, like, really upset about it. And I'm like, do you want to tell him?
Mike.
Thankful I'm going first.
Mike.
Yes,
Mike.
Sir. Yes, sir.
Can you do a hot open since we're crunched for time?
All right. For the annual Thanks, I Guess episode, I thought I would praise my home away from home, the Belcourt Theater.
Because you've never talked about that.
Yeah, it's been, what, 5 minutes since the last
time? Tens of minutes.
5 tenths of seconds. It was founded in 1925, the 90th anniversary, as the Hillsborough Theater. From 1934 to 1936, it was the home of the Grand Ole Opry. After a stint as a playhouse, and a branch of Carmike Cinemas, the Belcourt Cinema was rebranded as the Belcourt Theater in 1999, becoming Nashville's home of art house, repertory, and world cinema. Today, I thought I would showcase three films that blew my mind that I watched there that are available from your Nashville Public Library in three different categories, repertory, documentary, and 12 Hours of Terror. Oh, boy. Earlier this year, I took a half day off work to watch the first in Satyajit Ray's Apu trilogy, Prather Panchali. It begins just before the birth of a child named Apu, and then flash forward is about forward a few years. I couldn't get the right date. I think it's like he's like 5 or 6 or something. There's not really like a plot per se, but it feels more like a slice of life drama about what it was like to live as a poor child in rural India in the 1920s. Highlights for me include the cinematography. There's a sequence where the camera tracks Apu and his sister who are following after an ice cream vendor, where the camera is focusing on a reflection in a pond that is, like, jaw-droppingly gorgeous. I was surprised that this was Ray's first film. The Criterion Collection have, like, remastered it, and so it's, like, really, like, you know, is amazing in 4K restoration. And I liked the character of Apu's mother, who... I felt really sorry for her because, like, you know, his father does, like, nothing to raise the children. So, like, you know, one time when he stumbles home late at night, she's like, you know, I raise the children alone 99% of the time. Why can't you get, like, a real job and, like, help support the family? And it's this whole, like, you know.
You just said, like 87,000 times.
Oh,
just,
no.
Like, for sure.
Like, tense.
Yeah.
Next.
I've never, like, done that.
Like. Next is a documentary I saw a couple of years ago called The Gatekeepers, which is about the Israeli Internal Security Service, which is kind of like a cross between the FBI and the National Guard, called the Shin, you know, the official word is the Shin Bet, which is pretty amazing to me is that they got the filmmakers got access to 6 former heads of the agency, all of whom go into shocking detail about some of the stuff that they did to keep Israel safe. I was surprised to learn that Shin Bet essentially ran the Gaza Strip and parts of Lebanon without oversight from the prime minister. I don't really want to get into detail about things that could be controversial, but I'll just end by saying that it's a really great documentary, especially if you're interested in the conflict in the Middle East, especially if, you know, some of the heretofore unknown background players. Lastly, longtime listeners and or everybody I know, even slightly well, knows that one of the highlights of the year for me is the 12 Hours of Terror. Ooh. This year was more like 13 and a half hours.
I want my money back! Playing for 12.
Yeah. Lies. Just usually a good mixture of old favorites, obscure jabs, and new stuff. One of my favorite discoveries there was a movie called Detention from year two of 12 Hours of Terror. It feels like a cross between, like, say, Scott Pilgrim, House, and Scream. It's kind of hard, you know, it begins as a generic slasher movie. It eventually includes time travel, body swapping, and end-of-the-world apocalyptic horror. Let's put it this way. The jock football character, for no reason, starts turning into the Fly and, like, starts spitting up acid and, like, you know, seeing things and kaleidoscope vision, and nobody cares. Like, it's this minor plot point that, like, oh, by the way, I'm becoming a fly. If you don't mind something like, you know, baggage from previous relationships as video game fights and Scott Pilgrim, or, like, you know, just random, like, you know, the cat's supposed to be a horror creature and House or something, I think you'd dig this. That was how I met Bill. Previously before that, he was some dude who worked upstairs, and then we chatted about Detention and 12 Hours of Terror, and he became that cool dude who works upstairs.
It's a beautiful story.
Aren't you glad we're all better people?
What do you got, man?
I'm going to go a different direction.
spit
take on Jeremy. So as Americans, it's very easy to become complacent about everyday life. We take for granted that when we turn the light switch on, the lights will come on. And
better.
We could basically eat whatever we want, whenever we want, because there's always time to make a run for the border. But after reading the book 1,000 Wells by Jenna Lee Nardella, this year I am thankful for water. Clean water, hot water, water on tap whenever I need it. In this country, water is so plentiful that our biggest worry is usually about how to get the recommended 8 glasses. But in Africa, this is not the case for many people. In the majority of cities, especially in the rural areas, water is a daily struggle. Most families have to send someone many miles, say anywhere from 2 to 5, which is one way, to fetch the necessary water to cook with, drink with, and if there's enough left over, to clean or bathe. Might not sound so bad to say you have to walk 2 miles for water. I basically walk that to get to the library from where I park every day. But water is heavy. And I don't know how many gallons of water a family of, say, 5 people would need in one day, but I can't imagine that it would be easy to carry that back in one trip, you know, to make it worthwhile. Also, in some areas, the women who fetch the water, and let's be honest, in male-dominated Africa, it's going to be the women and children who have to do this. The women must walk through very dangerous areas and risk getting raped or worse just to get this basic necessity for their families. And even if they do get there and back, there's a very high probability that the water they have fetched won't be clean or safe, which increases disease and malnourishment. So enter Jenna and the band Jars of Clay. At the beginning of the millennium, they began dreaming on how they could best serve and love humanity, and their answer was Blood Water Mission, and they set about building and funding 1,000 wells in Africa. And Jars of Clay is a band I have been a fan of since high school, so I've heard of Blood Water Mission before I had read this book. And this book is specifically more about Jenna's struggle. She was the one in charge of the charity. Bloodwater actually met its goal in 2011 with 1,000 wells, but it's still working to help bring clean water to Africa. I am thankful for water every time I turn on a faucet and it comes out crystal clear. I'm thankful for hot water every time I take a shower. And while it's not my specific gift, I am thankful that there are people like Jenna and Jars of Clay who can work with local people in Africa to make their world a better place. Jenna is actually a Nashville transplant. She moved here from Colorado to help start Bloodwater. And she joined Dan Hazelty and the lead singer of Jars of Clay at a recent Salon 615 here in August at the library. And I don't know, I haven't seen them post it yet. They've been posting podcasts and videos of those events. I haven't seen this one come up yet. I don't know if it's going to go online anytime soon, but stay tuned for that and check out what they have to say.
Is it there was like the CEO of Nestle who they make chocolate, but they bottle water.
They do have water, yeah.
The guy said that was talking about water rights in Africa and other third world places, and was saying that water is a privilege and not a right or whatever. It was like defending his company
his tyrannical company
for hoarding
water.
Yeah. That's horrible.
Well, they say that it's gonna, like, water is going to be the new commodity.
Oh yeah,
it's going to be the big, like, if you have water rights to something, you can hold on to them, and you're gonna, if you have good water,
I'm going to talk about something completely different. shifting gears again. First world problems.
So, save us from...
So, wet blanket.
I got wet feet.
Drag us out of this well of seriousness.
Oh, yeah, oh man.
So, I'm gonna toot my own horn here and say that I think it is the height of gratitude for someone to give thanks for something that you kind of complain about all the time. That's either the height of gratitude or height of what's that word? Entitlement. Entitlement.
Yeah.
What's the privilege is the word I was looking for. So anyway, I'm gonna give thanks for technology and specifically Hoopla because I am not a I don't like ebooks very much, and when the library started pushing them and getting them a lot, and people were downloading them a lot, I was turning my nose and complaining or whatever. But also realizing that my beliefs don't have to be someone else's beliefs, and just because I prefer a smelly paperback to a expensive tablet doesn't mean that everyone else has to. And then we got Hoopla, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. You know, there's movies and music on here, and then you can sample. And then they got comic books on there, and I was like, oh, my God.
Then suddenly,
we lost Jeremy for a week when that happened.
Then, Jeremy went down.
And I still don't. I don't dig into it the way, like, I don't check stuff out from it and then read it and enjoy it the way that I do actual physical things because there is too much of a barrier between me and the thing that I'm trying to consume.
You can always lick your screen.
Yes, I could. I've tried that.
Oh, my.
It's dusty.
I tend to not lick my electrical appliances.
This tastes salty.
But there's so much stuff on there that either I'd have to shell out.
Try to make it better. Just try to make it better.
I would have to shell out a bunch of money for or stuff I would have to get through ILL. And then I would have to wait and wonder if Amanda thought I was some sort of Brian-esque pervert.
I tend not to judge. I only mock.
I appreciate that. Also, there's so much music on there that I'm curious about. Oh, this is a cool. Look at this cool cover. I'm gonna check this out. My queue is filled for years to come. I've got like over 300 things on there.
This is just the first paragraph, gang.
Poor Jeremy. I'm thankful for Jeremy being here.
I'm a firm believer that that infinite choice is not really a choice, so it's kind of a contradiction for me to sort of sing the praises of the bottomless entertainment hole that is the internet. But I love the options that Hoopla has to offer, and here are just a couple of them. There's a comic book that I enjoy called Savage Dragon, and there are two collections that are on there. I usually read these books when I pick them up in bargain bins, but it's from the 90s. It's one of the first Image comics, and it's the only Image comics that is still being completely done by its creator and is also still, like, it and Spawn are the only two that are still running. And this guy didn't start, Eric Larson, the creator, didn't start making toys or buying sports balls or, drawing pouches. He just did his comic book, and it's great.
I got your burns.
Yeah.
They're fun.
Excellent. Also, there's a music on there, a collection called Wine Press, The Complete Recordings. This is by no means the greatest collection of songs ever written, but the final track is called Disappointed, and I heard this song once when I was a young man. It made me jump for joy only because there was a keyboard in it, and for some reason it really set something alight in me. When I found it on Hoopla, I thought, oh, my God, I can't believe Hoopla has this, and that sort of got the ball rolling on me enjoying that. Also, the comics, I talked about comics before, but the comics rollout on Hoopla was a little kind of exciting at first, but kind of a letdown because mostly there was like stuff like RoboCop and Big Trouble and Little China, like licensed stuff. Mm. But then they got a bunch of DC stuff, and then now there's a flood of things, including a bunch of Dark Horse and Image stuff, and there's a collection called Adventures into the Unknown, and there's three volumes of this. They collect, it's the first ongoing horror anthology. It ran from 1948 to 1967. We have three volumes of this. It contains, I think, something like 12 issues. That's pretty amazing. And finally, as a lover of acronyms, I always thought that my love came from Marvel Comics, stuff like S.H.I.E.L.D. and AIM. But now I realize that it came from the television program Cops. It was a cartoon.
Yes, I remember this well.
Central Organization of Police Specialists.
Yes.
I liked this show as a kid. And you can watch these on YouTube in very poor quality, but that's illegal. And you can watch it on Hoopla. You can see Longarm shoot handcuffs out of his sleeve. And if you like the game Bionic Commando, that'll give you a jolt. And also has a really awesome catchphrase, which...
It's crime fighting time.
I say that every morning when I wake up.
Check that out.
The bag is called like Crooks or something, and that was an acronym.
Oh, maybe.
I'm not sure.
This big boss.
Feature correction.
This big boss man or whatever is the villain.
It talks like this, eh?
Mentioning that a lot of the stuff on YouTube is illegal is a good transition to what Bill is going to tell us about.
Yeah.
It's not illegal.
You could have always just chose one of those things on Hoopla to talk about too, but it's all good. I'm thankful for your passion.
Well, to be fair, I did talk about three things.
Mike also talked about three, and I left him off the hook.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah!
I'm still podcast favorite because I
don't
talk
the about theme!
One.
Well, you know, I... Oh, whoa. Jeremy Rage. Anyway.
God!
Wait, cheese can you...
This is so good. This is so good. This is an audio podcast. I wish you could see the look on Bill's face. Because I think normally, Bill... likes what you guys are talking about.
He's
waiting to go. Now he's waiting to go.
Yeah, he's raring. Yeah,
he's just like,
these bastards, shut up. Hey, Bill.
Okay. Well, I too am thankful for you two. Not to watch with kitties do or to watch deadly animals.
No cops for you.
But recently I found something that you film lovers might like. I was listening to an interview with director Edgar Wright, director of Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and The World's End.
The aforementioned Scott Pilgrim.
Oh.
And he should have been the director of this summer's Ant-Man until he got fired to replace. I digress, however. So Edgar Wright was discussing how director Alex Cox introduced him to a movie on this show that was on the BBC called Movie Drone. So I was just curious, so I went to YouTube and typed in Movie Drone and came up with a treasure trove of movie introductions of cult movies. Movie Drone was a BBC movie presentation that would have Alex Cox, director of Repo Man, introducing movies such as Wicker Man, The Terminator, Excalibur, Talk Radio, and Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, among many others. Also, film critic Mark Cousins, does the introduction to a slew of offbeat movies. Mark Cousins is a filmmaker and presenter and film critic, and best known for his documentary, The Story of Film, An Odyssey. I highly recommend Movie Drone, and if you would like to look at something a little longer, also from the BBC, I found these two documentaries. One is called The History of Horror and Horror Europa with Mark Gatiss, and he is an English actor, comedian, screenwriter, and he also co-created Sherlock with Brendan Cumberbatch, and a major horror fan. I recommend A History of Horror and Horror Europa. Both, I'm thankful for YouTube, and I guess that's what I'm grateful for or thankful for. I'm thankful for YouTube for presenting this stuff to me. Brian.
All right. Do you two guys have any corrections?
I have one, but I thought it'd be mean.
Why?
He didn't say Benedict Cumberbatch.
What did he say?
Brendan Cumberbatch.
Oh, Benedict Cumberbatch. Yeah. I was on a roll.
That's okay.
And they behaved themselves. They didn't want to interject.
Well, you know,
thank you though. That would be.
And do you think Movie Drome? Do you think the name of that is inspired by the Cronenberg movie Videodrome?
Could be.
Is it the new flesh?
But it's just great. They're like 5 minutes and very informative. And
his
personal opinion.
Yeah, it could be fun.
Like you don't get the movie, but you can watch it and then go home, look at your movie.
You know, I don't...
Prisoners of Gravity, that was what you recommended. That was really good, too.
I was thinking about that last night.
Yeah, I subscribed to the channel of the guy who uploaded those, and every now and then I'll bid you.
I don't talk about it a lot, but I do get a lot of my entertainment from YouTube. YouTube's really starting to blossom. And on I'll save it for the music episode. I have some thoughts about YouTube and music when we do our Best of the Year music episode. But what I am thankful for is that I have a job. I'm very thankful for that. A lot of people don't have jobs, and that sucks. So not only do I have a job, but working at the library is kind of my dream job. It's what I've always wanted to do, and I am doing it. And for this, I'm very, very grateful. Now, if you pair this with the idyllic childhood I described in the last week's episode, it becomes apparent that my life is perfect in every way, and when I poop, it's not poop, it's strawberry yogurt. I jest...
Gross.
Too much info.
Yeah.
I just...
I think that kind of gets me off the hook permanently for everything I ever just, do.
You know...
Except Elvis Costello.
You know, normal people have blueberry yogurt. Strawberry yogurt is just gross.
I just...
What? We want to get that checked out.
Chocolate?
Chocolate, yeah.
I just... The next line was going to be, though I am jesting, I'm going to see the doctor about strawberry yogurt thing. But one of the benefits of working at the library
is... You don't want blood in your yogurt stool.
That made it worse.
That could just be vanilla.
Maybe my favorite line.
Stop.
Said,
stop.
Is, yeah, we
I want
well
you to
quit,
stop.
Yeah, quit the podcast. I'm done.
Brian,
drop
continue.
The mic.
One of the benefits of working at a library is you never have to buy books, and it's true. I don't know why. Like the thing that you were talking about last week, Mike, about how you got this book thing and that led you to libraries, and you have like a personal library at your house. Like for me, like being a library nerd just like broke that, and like I don't buy.
This
books.
Is my lab. This is my book collection.
Yeah,
I work
it's,
here.
It's weird. So like I don't buy books, and the other thing I've learned another benefit.
I have this problem with the late fees and bringing back things.
Oh yeah. Well,
so
you know.
I have a hole in me that I'm trying to fill.
Strawberry yogurt.
So the
I was going to say comic books.
Stop.
Got in trouble.
One of the other benefits of working at the library that I've discovered over the years is that some people think librarians are sexy. But let's go back to the first benefit.
I have the same problem.
I have been surprised.
So let's go back to the first.
But that's a story for another time.
Let's go back to the first benefit.
Stop.
You don't have to buy books because you can check out 100 books from the library at a time. That is crazy. I tell so many people that and they don't believe me. You can check out 10 DVDs a month. On Overdrive, you can have 25 books, audiobooks, or movies checked out at a time. Maybe not 25 more.
You mean on Hoopla, you can check out 10 things.
Oh, 25.
You can have 25 on hold, I think.
Yeah,
you
can only
have
25 holds.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, there's a limit to movies.
I think Overdrive is 25 holds, too. I think you can have
So wait.
You said 25 DVDs a month, but you meant on Hoopla, you can check out 10.
No. You can check out 10 DVDs a month on Overdrive.
On Overdrive?
You can check out. There's a
limit to how many DVDs you can check out at a time.
But yeah, you can have 10 DVDs at a time. That's where I'm. Yeah. Sorry.
Yes, I understand.
Correction.
We're gonna get to this to that. Yeah, trust me.
Okay.
It's
all
it's
will
be gonna
be
amazing.
It'll all be interesting. Yet.
This doesn't get.
So you can check out 10 DVDs at a time.
Yes.
You can have 25 audiobooks or books checked out from Overdrive. Hoopla, you can have 10 albums, movies, or audiobooks. Checked out a month. Freegal, you have unlimited streaming, but you can download to own 7 songs a week. You can get any of the magazines that are in Zinio, you can get for free every month. And besides all these things, I happen to work at the main library, and this is a very beautiful building in downtown Nashville. It was designed by Robert Stern, has a very classical look, has a lot of marble and wood. No one believes it's as new as it is. It's a very timeless building, and it is not uncommon for book lovers, anyway, to come to the library and actually get emotionally overwhelmed because the building is so beautiful. If I didn't work at the library, I'd be thankful to live in a city that had a library like the main library downtown and not all the other resources that I mentioned. Maybe it's oxymoronic, but I'm both proud and humble to work here.
Or prumble.
Yes, I'm prumbled to work here. Okay. Now, we can go back a little bit, just to roll back a little bit. When I was figuring out what I wanted to do with my life, it wasn't just my love of books that nudged me towards libraries. What really sealed the deal was that I started working at libraries as a young person, and my coworkers were really awesome people and amazing. And it was like, if I have to work somewhere, I want to work with awesome people. That contradicts what I said earlier about this always being my dream job. But just like the strawberry poop thing, let's not think about that. Let's just move on. But
or just keep coming back to it.
Yeah, we derailed so much, it's not even fun anymore.
But libraries being filled with awesome people who work there has also proved true at Nashville Public Library. I'm really thankful that I work with everyone on this podcast. Without you guys, there would not be a podcast. And as has been proved in this very episode, all of you are smarter than me. you correct my grammar on the spot. You correct my inarticulate, nonsensical sentences on the spot. All of you are funnier than me and far more knowledgeable on the things that you know about. So you guys keep this ship afloat. like I said, thankful I have a job. Even better, I have a job that 1 hour a week I get to hang out and just talk about stuff you can get from here at the library with you guys. It's wonderful. Thank you very much.
Well, shucks.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Group hug.
Guys,
hey,
what do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Well, maybe the library has it, maybe the library doesn't, but either way, it's tickling our fancy, Jeremy.
Well, I talked about technology in the main segment. I will talk about it again. This time, I'm listening to a book that I downloaded from Overdrive, called Game Life, which is a memoir about computer games by Michael W. Kloon. I am not a gamer, unlike Mike's dad, but I am fascinated by this world of games. And for some reason, I've in the last couple of years, have found a lot of really good books about video games. Last year, Console Wars was one of my favorite books. This book is a memoir about how the author kind of got hooked on computer games. Like, he played all these text-based computer games on, like, Commodore 64 and stuff when he was a kid. And I don't know, like, I saw an article, too, about this upcoming book about Dungeons & Dragons and talks about how Dungeons & Dragons is...
Yeah, we just got that, the Empire of Illusion.
Gary Gygax. Yeah. It was a rush because Brian wanted it.
Yeah.
That would be Empire of Imagination, Gary Gygax, and the Birth of Dungeons and Dragons by Michael Whitwer.
There was an excerpt. From it in Slate talking about how the world of D&D is responsible for the world that we live in now, like whether we know it or not. And like
I've been curious to read it because of that.
Yeah. As someone, I played D&D one time when I was like 12 years old, and my gatekeeper for that sort of stuff was my dearest friend from then, but also like a selfish jerk who like would just play Final Fantasy when I'm like, hey, why don't we like sword fight or like run around? He's like,
this sounds like every DM I've ever had.
Yeah, this is a one player game. Like,
but you have to sit here and watch me.
Exactly. Or like if we play D&D or GURPS or something. You go into a room. There's a box in the room. What do you do? And I'm like, I want to leave the room. He's like, you can't leave the room. And I was like, this is stupid. I'm done.
Wow, that's terrible.
Terrible game.
Yeah, wow.
Never again. So like it seriously ruined me on it. So I found some enjoyment in hearing about people's personal experiences about it. Also, there is a game-based book review of this book that the Paris Review did.
Played this review.
Yeah.
Or I played about half of it.
I played a little bit of it. It seemed pretty cool.
Yeah, like I watched that you could play Nintendo as one of the options, mm-hmm. and he spends like three paragraphs saying how Nintendo's for children. Yeah. You need to turn this off. But then you play some more. It's like, you know,
I just can't
your brain anymore. Is rotting. Yeah. Why you keep doing this? It's like, because when I was eight, this is what I played.
Exactly.
What do you want from me, guys?
Exactly. There's a really great scene early on in the book where the author's mother takes this game that he bought called The Bard's Tale 2, which was a D&D game.
Yes.
And she says that it's evil, and it was really funny. And then also this morning...
The role-playing game was not a D&D game.
Oh, well,
He
said it was Dungeons, based on Dungeons & Dragons. But
it could have been based, but it was not an official
D&D game. But there was a
quote... I like that I have a minion that lays down the factual law on which games were actually Dungeons & Dragons.
Well, I watched my dad play because I was not allowed to play Bard's Tale as previous episode.
There was a quote this morning. There's a lot of talk about maps and three dimensions and numbers. There was a quote this morning that I really liked where he says, the map-based computer role-playing game is a spiritual device for separating action from ego. And I don't know. I'm still parsing that out in my brain. But
I'll explain it at the end if we get enough.
That really, it excited me hearing that. And I was like, in a memoir? Bill?
Well, Tickling My Fancy is director Philippe de Broca. I'm probably pronouncing that name wrong, but anyway, I'll get the movie titles right. I hope he's best known for his cult movie King of Hearts. The library has just received two of de Broca's movies on one DVD, That Man from Rio and Up to His Ears. That Man from Rio is just a lot of fun. It's a fast-paced spy thriller, a bit of a James Bond spoof, and it stars Jean-Paul Belmondo, who is probably the most physical actors of all time. And so if you're in the mood for a fun movie watching That Man from Rio and Up to His Ears on the same DVD, I highly recommend them, Amanda.
Okay, so I think I've mentioned before how sometimes cool books just come into my world that I've never heard of. Someone else requests them, they come across my desk. And after I send their copy on, I put a hold on it for myself. And this is a Jeremy-approved tickle my fancy.
What?
Because I am a fan of the non-superhero graphic novel.
Ah.
That's not necessarily. So recently, The Sculptor by Scott McCloud came across my desk.
I read that. And,
yeah, it's really, it was really good. So the basic premise is that a starving artist in New York agrees to give up the rest of his life for 200 days of unimaginable artistic sculpting talent. So, and as you can imagine, things do not go exactly as he plans. but his 200-day journey is definitely unforgettable. I read this book in about 2.5 hours, and I think it was more powerful because I just did it in one sitting. It's pretty, I mean, it's thick. It's not.
It is huge.
Yeah, it takes a minute.
Yeah,
it's a phone book.
It took me a couple of days.
But you just kind of get immersed in the story, and then you want to see how it ends. And I've never heard of Scott McCloud. I don't know if you guys.
He's a big deal.
I'm not in that world.
He wrote
Understanding Comics?
Yeah, Understanding Comics.
Yeah,
yeah. It's like a big.
Very good.
He also did a superhero comic in the 80s called Zot.
Mm-hmm.
That is really good.
So it's I wanted to see if he had anything else out there, and I saw Zot, but I'm like, I don't think
so. Zot, I know that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
His other books are like all theory.
Yeah, they were like more like nonfiction books as opposed to
they're good, but you know, you kind of, I mean.
And this was his first like story.
I think so.
Graphic
I think at least in
like
a long time, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought his art was really good. It's gut-wrenching, it's funny, so it kind of spans that whole emotional genre. So I would say if you have a bit of time and you're looking for something that's really cool, it's a little different, but this is definitely one to check out. I would add, too, that Brian, a little bit ago, he recommended The Wicked End of the Divine, that he really liked, and I don't want to bring him down, but don't bring me down. I didn't. I read the first one. I'm going to have the second one on hold, but the art was beautiful, and I loved the concept, but the story was flat. Like, it wasn't.
There's no story in that.
No, like, there was so much more they could have done with that, and I feel like this one kind of does that. Like, he has a great story. I mean, it's a little bit predictable, but it's still a really good story. So definitely check out The Sculptor.
Nice.
I have a volume 2 of Wicked of Divine. I got my bedstand at home, and I can't wait to look at all the pretty pictures.
The pictures are awesome, and the concept is great, but there's just no writing there. It's just horrible.
I tried to read it, and I couldn't get into it.
No, I'm like, this is stupid. So,
wow.
Sorry.
That's why I like it. Mike, what's tickling your fancy?
Well, you know, I was all set to finally recommend an amazing movie podcast today to tie into my movie theme, but Amanda had to mention the awe-inspiring majesty of this Blue Oyster Cult last week, which prompted me to fall into an azure-shaded, seafood-flavored wormhole.
Seafood? I don't know enough about BLC.
Blue Oyster Cult.
Oh, Oyster
Cult,
Jesus. I'm slow on the uptake, y'all.
Right. I just let him have it.
I thought it was fun, but okay. Anyway,
it's great. It. I just am stupid. You did a great job.
Word.
I'm an idiot. That's
you get to see what I'm about to recommend, and then you'd be like, oh, Mike's not that bright. today, I thought I'd recommend one of my favorite songs of theirs, one that I dust off every few months to rock out to. First, let's flashback to about 8 or 9 years ago. I was not a fan of live music, like, at all. It was like spending $50 to have the pleasure of having my feet hurt and listening
50?
To it.
50? Then you got off good.
$50 or more. To the pleasure of having my feet hurt and listening to a worse version of a song that sounds a million times better on CD. But that long, long time ago, I acquired, through means, BOC's entire discography and landed on the live version of The Red and the Black from the album Extraterrestrial Live. The Red and the Black from BOC's second album, Tyranny Mutation, sucks. I mean, it's about Mounties. Gross. There's nothing less metal. There's nothing less metal than Mounties, other than maybe another song from the album called Mistress of the Sea Salt, Quicklime Girl, where the chorus is, Quicklime Girl. Quicklime Girl. See, BOC fans, like, you know, tend to, like, divide Boys Are Gold between the first three albums and everything else, and I'm more of an everything else kind of guy. Anyway, but be like...
Sacrilegious. I like it.
See? You know, I mean, Secret Tree is good, but man... Anyway, the live version of Red and Black is a million zillion gajillion times better. It rocks my socks off. There was Mike before the Red and Black Live, and now there's after the Red and Black Live Mike. There have been many times that my eyes have filled with water, salty tears. This song was so good. Songs were, some of these songs really do to me.
Quicklime Mike. Sea Salt Mike.
Ugh.
Tear Stain Mike.
We have it on Freegal. Of course, since you probably care about lyrics and feelings, you give it a men a shrug and wonder why I like things. But I can always dream that someone out there shares my taste in music.
Corrections. Diane Mott Davidson's Goldie Schultz series is also known as the Goldie Bear series, and that's how it appears in the library catalog.
I think she gets married.
Oh.
I think that's why.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Any other corrections?
This only affects me, and only I care, but whatever. My favorite Batman artist is Kelly Jones, not Sam Keith.
Oh.
Yeah, cool. Kelly Jones is the best.
He is also very good.
Yeah, he's my favorite, too.
Yeah, see? Consensus.
This is a bloviation, not really a correction. But while Amanda was elucidating the charms of the cozy genre, Jeremy made a joke implying that the audience was half-baked.
Did I?
And when Amanda was finished...
No, I didn't.
When Amanda was finished, Jeremy immediately started talking about hack writers. I think the implication being that cozy readers aren't that bright and the authors of cozy are hacks.
Whoa.
I should point out in the same show, Jeremy took the time to profile an Alien vs. Predator paperback.
Whoa.
That was a tie-in with the Alien vs. Predator comic book.
Which, if...
This burns so much, I'm backing away from all the heat.
So
I said hack, and then I immediately followed that by saying, like, not as a judgment, but as someone who churns out a great deal of work in a short amount of time. So I qualified that statement and used, like, perhaps a derogatory term, but to mean something...
In a helpful way.
A person that is prolific. And I did not say half-baked. She said uncatered or something, right? And I said, oh, like the audience, meaning, like, there's not an audience. That audience doesn't get things handed to them on steamer trays much.
The evidence is out there.
I feel pretty good because I thought I had like a mansplaining moment, but
I will say that
I guess not. Yeah,
this often happens in the publishing world that genres that are marketed towards women are often dismissed as fluff and treated with no respect, but genres that are marketed towards men are just treated as like things that are good or exist or sometimes dumb.
But,
For instance, Alien vs. Predator, Prey by husband and daughter team.
Husband and daughter team? Yeah.
Husband and daughter?
Wow.
Interesting.
No.
That's my sister. She's my daughter.
Somebody who's married and then someone that has
the
a daughter.
Chinatown special.
That's true.
The implications of this, you know, I don't pass judgments. I just notice things. For more information, you can go to
www.twistmywords.nashville.
The library. Let's get the URL
right.
www.library.nashville.com.
Asheville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Next week,
twist my words.
Da, 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 the Return of the Poppies, our annual award show.
Our best of the year cycle.
We
all fall into a blissful sleep.
Best of the year next week. This is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me today are... Remember, I didn't bust your balls yet. That happens later in the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Spoiler!
Continuity. I had already decided, like, nope. That's excellent. Jeremy.